listen, listen, listen. God is speaking to us.
Kairos Milwaukee United Church of Christ presents The Jesus We Have Known. The reflection by the Reverend Jean Randall Bodman, presented on Sunday, March 17th, 2024.
Please pray with me. Holy One, source and breath of life, make the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts a doorway to you. For surely you are the source and ground of all our living. Amen. I know that many of you, like me, use your smartphone and your computer to access all kinds of things. That's where we get our news, social connection with friends and family that live far away. It's where I know I get encouragement to keep exercising and tips on nutrition and recipes. I stream music and movies and I shop for books. A lot of my life is online. Like me, I'm sure many of you have noticed that once you click on a certain kind of content, it is suddenly everywhere. This is a tiny bit embarrassing, but I once clicked on an ad for moisturizer for older women. And for months afterward, I was served ads for every imaginable product to fix what our culture understands as the problem of women looking their age. That's a story for another day. But it points to the reality that our lives, our online lives, are governed by marketing algorithms that target us based on what we've clicked before. Which may be why my world is suddenly filled with a constant stream of information about the current shift in religious life in America. My social media and my news feeds are filled with stories about these cultural changes. Stories about churches across the country, in every region, even the Bible Belt, and across denominations, from the Catholics to the Baptist to the big box non-denominational evangelical churches to the UCC, all of us declining in size, diminishing in financing, and losing cultural relevance. It's a complicated picture. People are leaving churches and other faith communities, not just Christian churches, for a wide variety of reasons. Some of them are theological disagreement or political disagreement. Some are based on the exclusion of LGBTQ people. Some because a person has had a personal experience of a particularly controlling community. Or they've participated in a community that allowed sexual exploitation to continue and be hidden for years and years. So it is not a simple story, this change in the religious patterns of the American people. Nor is it true that every single individual congregation is in decline. The decline is a big word in these stories. It could make a person lie awake at night. There are congregations that are healthy and growing, but overall there is a large cultural shift going on. A decades-long trend of decline in the religiosity of the American people. This seems to have been accelerated by our collective experience of COVID. My Apple News feed and Instagram page and my Amazon book suggestions may be feeding me a disproportionate amount of information about all of this, just to heighten my anxiety and keep me clicking and buying the next book. But that doesn't mean it isn't also real. And if I'm honest, it's a very confusing time to be a clergy person. Because of course, I find this current shift dismaying. I feel real grief for the loss of the church experience of my childhood, when everyone I knew went to a church or a synagogue nearby in our neighborhood. And where I went to a church that was filled with people of all ages, where we had Christian ed for all ages, children through adult, that happened before we went to worship. I went to a church where we sponsored and helped to resettle refugee families from Vietnam and gathered to write our letters protesting the war, where we painted our signs together to go to those protests. It was also a church that hosted Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts and Couples Club and Bridge Club where he had potlucks and church picnics and every other suburban trope of Protestant America. It was a church that had a female associate pastor back in the early 70s and a literacy ministry in a prison nearby. It was not a perfect place. When our pastor's son came out as gay in 1976, there was some gossip and some consternation among our older members. There was a lot we didn't know, but no one left the church, and no one tried to undermine the pastor, and everyone kept loving his son. So even though we were not perfect, we did our best. This was the church where I learned to see Jesus. And with a mixture of naivete and arrogance, I assumed that this was the Jesus and that other churches were all the same, open and kind, critical of the cruelties of the world, and committed to compassion and justice and peace. Imagine my surprise when I was disabused of this belief as a college freshman, when for the first time I saw Christianity from an outsider's perspective. It started right away. I have a vivid memory of being in the locker room after a cross-country practice, probably the second week of my first semester of my freshman year. And there was another student who I had been running with and was really hoping that I would become friends with. She was a sophomore, and she was very smart and very cool. I asked her if she knew anything about the Christian Fellowship on campus. I cannot for the life of me remember the name of this young woman, and I can't remember the exact content of the words that she spat at me, but I will never forget the way her face changed from warm and open to closed and deeply suspicious and, frankly, hostile. I never learned anything about her experience or lack of experience of church. She quit the cross-country team, and we never happened to have a class together, but it was the first time I had had a conversation with someone that I considered warmly, to whom I was reaching out, who was shocked that I wanted to know something about a Christian event on campus. I started paying attention then to what other people assumed the word Christian meant. Not loving, not justice-seeking, not helping others and controlling oneself, but just the opposite, helping oneself and controlling others. Instead of open and welcoming, Christians were considered narrow-minded, bigoted, and judgmental. And that was before my academic study of the history of religion had even begun. It was a good primer. Not everyone comes so late. It doesn't take everyone as long to wake up as I did. I will never forget the day when one of my sweet fifth graders in my last church, we were walking together from the building that houses worship to the CE building, and he sidled up beside me because he wanted to speak to me privately. There was something he was really burdened about, and he wanted to be sure I knew about it because he had just learned about the Crusades, and he was worried that I didn't know. His face was filled with such sorrow as he realized that this was part of the history of his beloved church, where he came with his family every week to experience love and service and welcome. It's a hard thing to have to learn. Right now, there are two strands of critique of Christianity that I am reading online that are connected with each other, but not identical. The first are people who are moving away from conservative churches in which they were raised, churches where they first saw and learned to love Jesus, churches where they were themselves loved, but only if they conformed. If they were female and sensed a call to ministry, if they were lesbian, gay, transgender, or gender nonconforming, if they loved somebody LGBTQ, if they disagreed politically, there was pressure to earn continued belonging by conforming. Some people tell stories of gradual change and adaptation and a move step by step away from a community that was hurting them to one that sustains them. But more people tell really painful stories of rupture with family and friends and of a whole community that had sustained them and was spitting them out. These are abrupt and painful leave-takings. Many in this movement are working quite thoughtfully to deconstruct the faith in which they were raised, trying to filter out what they have come to see as cultural additions to what they hope will sustain them, the heart of a gospel that is good and nurturing. Some are reading widely across religious traditions and finding wisdom across the world that makes sense to them. Others are walking away from organized religion altogether and relying on their own individual spiritual experience through service or meditation or aesthetic encounter to guide them in a life that feels both grounded and free. Some are hopeful, some are angry. Many are really gracious and generous in sharing where they have been and what they hope for their future. There's a large and growing body of literature pouring out of people in this movement, theology and history, and especially memoir. I include in that a pretty wide range of authors, from Rachel Held Evans to Diana Butler Bass and Peter Enns and Sarah Bessie. There is a whole list of them. And if you're interested, I can point you to the websites that will list the authors and link to places where you can go to learn more about that. If that includes you, if there is a time in your past where there was a church that was hurting you. There's another movement that overlaps with this but is not identical to it, and that is the effort to decolonize Christianity. The deconstruction movement is pretty specifically a critique of evangelical Christianity in America and the way that it evolved in the 20th century, with its emphasis on biblical inerrancy, which I hasten to remind us all is a modern invention, and their anti-abortion activism and right-wing politics. Decolonizing, as its name suggests, seeks to peel back the ways that Christianity has been complicit for much longer with the European project of colonizing, conquering, and settling vast non-European parts of the world. Tracing this complicity with political power in ways that seem diametrically opposed to the teachings of Jesus, they trace this all the way down the centuries. As Howard Thurman wrote in Jesus and the Disinherited, it cannot be denied that too often the weight of the Christian movement has been on the side of the strong and powerful and against the weak and oppressed. This, despite the gospel. The author of the Instagram page, The Decolonizing Christian, whose identity is hidden on his page, I'm curious, I have to do some more digging, but he described the movement this way. Much of Christianity became antichrist by marrying itself to strength and power. It is what the book of Revelation warned would happen to the church if it became too seduced by the ways of empire. Sadly, Western Christianity was imperialized, and ever since then, it has been used as a tool for justifying the ways of empire. In other words, Christianity was colonized. It then became a tool for further colonization of places and people. It became that which was against the very people Jesus came to liberate, the oppressed and vulnerable. And Jesus seems to have warned against this when he reminded his followers that whatever one does or does not do for the last and the least, one does or does not do for Jesus himself. The colonizing project of Europe, in which Christianity was thoroughly complicit, has caused untold harm and wreaked destruction across the world. The cross was traded for the same powers that put Jesus on the cross in the first place. It is almost enough to make a person wonder if the world would not have come closer to understanding the gospel of Jesus if Jesus had not been here to be misappropriated. It's a bit of a heartbreak, really. The author continues to explain that this is not unique to Christianity. Empire will co-opt anything that works, Any tool of liberation for the people, the empire will co-opt and twist and turn to help keep people down. A decolonizing Christianity doesn't stay there in critique. Its work is on hope for a different future. It focuses on reordering of our world so that the last are first and the first are last. The question and the challenge that I hear in our reading from John this week leads me to this. How will we, at Kairos Milwaukee United Church of Christ, in our conference, in our denomination, how will we, as this people in our pews, how will we nurture the freedom of the people who are deconstructing a version of Christianity that hurt them? How will we learn from the theologians who are using the language of decolonization to uncover the heart of the gospel? How will we seek the face of Jesus together with those people? As we approach our great celebration, the short-lived hosannas of Palm Sunday, the poignance and tenderness of Jesus' last meal with his friends when he stooped down and washed their dirty feet and told them to model their love and service after that act, after the cruelty and heartbreak of Good Friday, and the joy and mystery of Easter Sunday, as we approach all of this Holy Week, I encourage you to think about the Jesus you know, about where and with whom you first saw him, and how your vision of him has changed over time. And what this Jesus reveals to you about the divine. Because now, in this moment, we have a critical calling. It isn't enough to just talk to each other about what we have seen. Now, when the same conquering impulse that led to the shape of the modern political world has led us to the brink of irreversible climate crisis, when there are authoritarians not only in Russia and Hungary, but right here in the United States of America, who are once again appropriating the face of Jesus and the influence of their version of church to assert their will, when the reproductive freedom of women and the freedom and safety of our LGBTQ siblings are being threatened in the name of Christianity, right now we have a calling to show people the Jesus we have seen. I am reminded of the story Diana Butler Bass told at the beginning of her theological memoir, Freeing Jesus. She was praying at the National Cathedral in a little side chapel where she liked to go because it was quiet. And she liked to kneel there at the front of the chapel under a large carved crucifix. She'd knelt there often before, but on this particular occasion, as she was praying, Jesus said to her, "Get me out of here." This is our high calling, to help get the Jesus we have known, the Jesus of compassion and justice and joy, out of the confines of that tradition has made for him, to help a hurting world see the beauty and freedom and truth in the Jesus we have known.
Listen, listen, God is speaking.